Today's episode is sponsored by Empower. It doesn't matter how much money you have, we all have money questions. Empower has the tech with a real-time dashboard and the people to help you take control of your financial future and empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Lauren.
Mike.
If you could have any job in the tech industry, what do you think it would be?
I think I would like to be an internal critic. I don't know if anyone would hire me to do this, but I would just like to be the person who says, you are not designing this for a real human being, or you need to treat both your users and your staff better.
The gadfly.
Yeah, the ombudsman. Is that how you say that?
Ombudsman.
Ombudsman. What would you be?
I'd want to be the barista on like one of the swanky campuses, mm-hmm. just so I could like chat with people all day and make them happy by giving them something that they want.
I would watch that sitcom. Was there a character like that on HBO Silicon Valley? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah, oversight. Mm-hmm. Is there security in that job?
Oof, I don't know. The tech industry has been suffering a lot of layoffs lately. I don't know if there's any job security in the tech industry anymore.
Yeah, we should talk about this.
Absolutely. Let's do it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I am Michael Calori. I am Wired's Director of Consumer Tech and Culture.
And I'm Lauren Good. I'm a senior writer at Wired.
We're also joined this week by Wired senior writer Paresh Dave visiting us from the business desk. Hello, Paresh.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Of course.
I think the first time we had Paresh on, it took us, 11 months before, as he pointed out, to bring him into studio. And now there's no stopping it.
It's because I became your ombudsman.
That's right. Welcome back, ombudsman.
Today, we are talking about tech jobs. In the first 7 weeks of 2024, tech companies, big and small, have been laying off significant numbers of workers. Amazon, Google, Discord, Duolingo, Cisco, Instacart, dozens of others. They all cut staff in January and February. It all adds up to tens of thousands of jobs lost across the industry. Companies often conduct layoffs at the very end or the very beginning of the year, so these workforce reductions are not particularly out of step with historical patterns. But the cuts that started last month are not slowing down, and that feels off. So we're going to talk about why. Now, in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about what it's like to interview for a tech job and how that typically strange experience is getting even stranger for job candidates. But first, let's talk about the layoffs. So Paresh, I want to start with you. You've been covering this along with our colleague, Amanda Hoover, on the business desk at Wired. And I want you to tell us, is there any end in sight to the tech layoffs?
No, absolutely not. Google has said that they're going to continue sort of cuts throughout this year. I think we can expect the same from Amazon and Meta and these other companies that are realizing that they're, like you said, you know, generating just as much sales as before. They're doing great. Profits are sort of skyrocketing. And they're still able to do this while they're sort of trimming staff. And so they're realizing that they can get rid of projects that aren't as interesting. They can roll things out slower. And then I'm sure you'd want to talk about the AI and how it's making workers supposedly more productive.
Can we just refer to the AI as Steve, like Rusty Foster does in Today in Tabs? Just give it a persona. Before we get to AI, though, there's been this narrative that part of this is because during the pandemic, tech companies hired. Their position might be that they overhired. Mm-hmm. And so this is a backlash to that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the pandemic made everyone think that we'd spend the rest of our lives online and never go out into the real world again and never, drop our phones and stop looking at them. Of course, that didn't prove true. We've all returned to our normal lives. We are spending a lot of time, you know, online, but maybe not as much as these tech executives were thinking. But that's only part of it. I mean, the other issue is that money was cheap during the pandemic. They were able to borrow money at low interest rates. As interest rates have gone up, companies can't do that as easily. Investors are demanding dividends. Meta, just this month announced that it would be paying a dividend on its shares to investors for the first time. You know, that's profits that could have been reinvested in the company and gone towards hiring. But these companies are having to make different sort of decisions in this environment where money isn't cheap anymore.
Which company is cutting the deepest?
Well, I would say, irrespective of how big the cuts are, I think the company where the cuts have been most destructive is Google. You know, Google had, until last year, hadn't gone through any sort of mass layoff before. And it's completely disrupted this culture where people thought that there was this safety, this sort of luxury of being in a tech job where they could sort of be there for the rest of their lives if they really wanted. And Google, over the past year plus, has been cutting people who've been there for 15 years, 20 years. And it's, you know, really shocked people to their core. And I think that sort of flowed to sort of other companies that are a little bit younger, like Meta and Amazon, that also felt just as sort of cushy. You could sort of stay there as long as you were doing a pretty decent job. And that's distinct from, let's say, Microsoft, where they've been doing sort of these cuts for that are performance-based, or IBM that have been doing these cuts that are performance-based sort of annually. And people were sort of used to workers coming and going. That just wasn't the case at a place like Google or Meta.
We should talk about Steve, the AI. I'm wondering if AI is a part of this story because tech companies are using AI to do the jobs or make jobs more efficient that humans used to do. Or if it's because they just feel perhaps on an R&D level, they need to invest much more in those departments and shift focus away from other departments.
Mm-hmm. I think it's both of those. And I think it's a third thing, which is AI and this sort of generative AI boom that we've seen over the last year is sort of leading to companies throwing stuff against the wall and like wanting to like move quicker and pivot. So it's that too. On the first part of it, yes. I mean, I spoke recently with a CEO of sort of a large software company where they said that their coders were able to write 30% more software code over the past year due to GitHub Copilot, which is this coding assistant that uses generative AI to help software engineers finish their code. And I mean, that seems like a huge number. And that productivity doesn't necessarily mean like layoffs. It just means that they're able to sort of build more tools, and hopefully that will lead to more sales. And then if it leads to more sales, then they can go into more hiring. But they're not letting go of those people because they want to keep building. On the second part, I think, you know, you've seen how companies have been trying to put these resources into developing Gemini, this new chatbot, right? Or recently renamed chatbot from Google. Meta has been putting things towards development of Llama and these other generative AI models. And so they've cut back from things like Google Assistant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is odd, considering that Assistant was like the first real, you know, for Google anyway, one of the first real sort of injections of AI into our world, right? Mm-hmm. This thing you could talk to and ask questions and was disembodied it's computer.
So 2010s.
It is.
But the part odds of what they're cutting are the features that they realized users were not using that much, right? Mm-hmm. And they're being, I guess, more judicious in a way that they probably should have been earlier and saying, well, this Google's whole thing and Meta's whole thing is like a thing needs to have hundreds of millions, you know, a billion users to be worthwhile for the revenue, you know, to matter to them. And they're just, they had let things maybe go on a little too long. But then, yeah, like I was saying, the third piece to this is just that because they're so unsure about where the winds will blow and what users will be interested in and what their competitors are doing, things are just moving so fast that they want to kind of be lean enough to shift people around. And so you're seeing layers of management disappear at these companies, which is interesting. And you're seeing, you know, maybe more contractors or contractors become even more fungible than they were already, which is kind of, you know, awful for someone in that position.
Yeah.
Have labor unions or the attempts at building labor unions within these big companies had any effect on this?
Certainly, we've seen like the Alphabet Workers Union, which is sort of hundreds of members, maybe a little bit over 1,000 now, which is a small drop in the bucket of Alphabet's, you know, 180,000 employees around the world. Certainly raise concerns about these layoffs, demand sort of more transparency. demand more warnings, better severance, you know, making sure it doesn't disproportionately affect minorities or, you know, people of color or women. But the workers don't have power right now. I mean, there are just so many laid off workers out there in the tech industry in places like Silicon Valley that workers just don't have a lot of power.
I think it's interesting that for a hot minute, there was a trend on social media of people live streaming or making TikTok videos of their layoff experience. Did you see any of those?
Yeah, you say it was a trend. I think it's very much still a trend. Although, you know, I was looking on TikTok last night, it's hard to tell which ones are like real or not. I feel like people are maybe staging some of these things for the views. But yeah, I mean, it's really taken the stigma out of layoffs in a way that is probably healthy for society, maybe not healthy in the fact that we're going through so many, you know, job cuts. But these videos where people are like literally showing the Zoom call where they're being laid off, or where they're talking about how they felt after finding out, or what the circumstances were, like one person posted about finding out while they were on vacation. And I think it's just making, it's creating this camaraderie, this community. You're not alone. It may not have anything to do with the fact of your performance or like this, you know, whether you're a good worker, a good coder. It can be totally random. It could be an algorithm choosing you. It could be a manager 10 levels above you who doesn't know you, just choosing a name out of hat, whatever it is. And I think that's good. You know, it seems healthy that we can sort of be more at peace and not think our lives are ending because we got laid off. Mm.
So it's a way for some of these laid off workers to find community through the absurdity of TikTok.
The human faces.
Or they're just trying to generate likes and get some money out of that.
Hashtag influencers.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come right back. Empower has the tech that can help get your money questions answered. What is your net worth? Are you saving enough? Are you on track for retirement? With the free and easy to use Empower Personal Dashboard, you can see your net worth, plan out your retirement age, track spending, create budgets, and more. And if you need a technology break, get a free second opinion by having a real live conversation with one of Empower's financial professionals to get clarity on your real life financial goals. Join 18 million Americans in Empower and take control of your financial future to empower what's next. Download the free app for Apple or Android now, or check out empower.com. By now, you've probably heard plenty of stories about what the job interview process is like for big tech jobs. Candidates being asked to solve complex logic problems, or do silly brain teasers, or write code on the spot. For a long time, these stories were pretty amusing, especially because you knew that on the other side of it lay a very high-paying engineering job. Tech workers are pampered, or they were anyway. But the mass layoffs that started in 2022 have now led to a glut of talent in the market. Jobs are harder to come by, and engineers in particular are being put through the gauntlet when they interview. Now, Lauren, you wrote a story for Wired this week about how the tech interview process has changed in light of these layoffs. Interviews have gotten absurd, but in a new way. What led you to this story?
I was starting to hear stories from tech workers and specifically engineers about how absurd, and that is the word that was used, these technical interviews were getting. Engineers are in kind of a unique position because, as you've pointed out, they tend to be extremely well paid. And that's usually right out the gate, right? It's one of those things where like people know that if you get an engineering job and you land at the right place, you could be fresh faced out of school and you're starting with a six-figure salary and maybe some options too. But on the other hand, engineering interviews are interesting because they are so complex and technical. You are not only judged based on behavioral interviews or problem solving, but also code this thing for me. Code it the way that I expect, use this language and deliver it in this time frame. And what I was hearing from engineers is that that part of the job interview was getting particularly demanding. I spoke to one engineer who said that they received a take-home test that was going to require them to build an entire app in a short time frame and provide written documentation for how they built that app. Whereas in the past, it might have been, here's a framework for an app, build a feature that would work within this app. I heard a similar story from another engineer who said that they were asked on the spot during a live coding test to build a to-do list app. Once again, not a feature, but build an entire app. I've heard that in some instances, engineers have to study or prepare hours and hours. Or in one case, someone said they had to come up with about 100 pages of documentation just to sort of power themselves through the interview process. And then in other cases, it's just a multi-stage process with as many as, you know, 6 different interviews in addition to a technical test that just make it really difficult to carve out the time to land the new job that you want or need. And so I decided to just dive into it.
Right. So, I mean, engineers have always had to take hairy tests like this, but these are just like extra, extra hairy, they sound like.
Things have gotten extra. That's a good way to describe it.
Are people actually completing them, or are they saying in the middle, when they're in the middle of the interview, when they're asked this on the spot, peace, I'm out, like, I'm not dealing with this?
Yeah, a lot of that is happening. The person I spoke to who said that they were asked to build an entire app in a short time frame said about halfway through the process, after a full day of coding and having not completed enough of the project, said, I think this is a sign I'm withdrawing my application. And that person has since shifted their job search to include smaller tech companies that they feel right off the bat could be a better cultural fit. And this is happening at big tech companies, but it's also happening across smaller tech companies as well, because as you said, Paresh, big tech companies now have the upper hand again. It's very clear that with all of these layoffs, there's a glut of talent in the market and employers now can be choosier. On the startup side, though, especially if they're lean and capital is hard to come by, one startup CEO told me that if she only gets, you know, 10 to 14 hires for engineering to basically keep their entire product, you know, running, she's going to be really choosy about who she hires because that's limited headcount. So it's happening on both ends of the spectrum.
Is that why expectations are so high of candidates? Because companies are being told to operate more leanly?
It's both that, and it's both a cultural shift. I spoke to Laszlo Bock, who, Paresh, you might know from your years covering Google, but was the SVP of People Operations, aka hiring at Google, for about a decade. And he basically said this isn't a response to or an overcompensation for that idea of the coddled engineer. And particularly during the pandemic, when people were able to work from home, maybe carve out a more flexible work schedule for themselves. And there is encouragement in recent years to kind of bring your whole self to work. And he said this is in some ways a direct backlash to that. That employers are saying, like, no, come to work. Come to the office and come ready to work and work hard. And once again, that goes back to employers having the upper hand.
Hmm.
But do these interviews, is there proof, you know, from Laszlo or anyone that they actually lead to better engineers? Like, you know, where's the evidence behind these crazy interview questions?
It's a really good question. And I wasn't able to uncover any evidence of that. What I did learn from talking to one source is that the bar for a technical interview has gotten measurably higher. I spoke to this woman named Aileen Lerner. She is an engineer herself who now runs a company called interviewing.io. And this is actually kind of an interesting company. They're an interview coaching platform for engineers. If you're an engineer seeking a job, you sign up, you pay $225 or more per interviewing session, and you get paired with a mock interviewer who doesn't know who you are, doesn't even see you, because these are not done over video, they're done over audio. And this person administers a test to you and you get to practice. And then they give you a score at the end, and they're scoring you on all kinds of categories, but that includes your technical score. And what Aileen told me is that over the past 2 years, interviewing.io, with all the thousands of interviews they have data from, they believe that interviewing for a technical job has gotten 22% more difficult, which means it has gotten that much more difficult to just receive a thumbs up on the technical portion of the interview. Because the mock interviewers are reflecting what is going on in the market, they're using a similar testing style or set of questions that, say, someone at Google or Meta would be using, and that it's just gotten that much harder.
And it's not that workers have gotten, you know, worse in some way.
Presumably, no, that is not the case.
So one of the places that people are talking about this is on the app Blind. Is that right?
Oh, good old Blind.
Yeah. Tell everybody who maybe doesn't know what Blind is, what it is, and then, you know, tell us what the conversations are.
Blind is an anonymous app for workers. And as I said in the story, it's a place where the truth is elastic, but some clear trends emerge. If you're a journalist, you can be on Blind too. Like, we could go and post about our own company if we wanted to. So people are coming from companies across all sectors on Blind, but it's a good place to check out where people are talking about the tech companies. And workers on Blind, engineers in particular, are talking about instances where this feels like the coding Olympics. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a little bit hyperbolic, but just indicating that an interview process they'd been through was really difficult. They say, I went through many rounds of interviews at Meta, and it turns out at the end of the day, they didn't have a quote unquote team match for me, meaning they didn't have a team to put them on. They didn't even actually have the headcount. So people have been anonymously complaining about this as well. And if you look hard enough, you start to see some pretty consistent patterns.
Do you think anything has changed with the non-technical portion of interviews?
That I'm not aware of. And it's probably worth noting that Aileen said that of the over 200,000 layoffs that have been tracked across the industry since 2022, that it's probably only tens of thousands of those jobs. She estimated 15,000 that were engineering jobs. So we know that the bulk of the layoffs have been across other job categories, like middle managers. Meta has been laying off a lot of middle managers, marketing, admin, support roles. And I don't know what those job interview processes are like, but I want to say, just because of how many people it is, it's probably also challenging just to get your foot in the door at this point.
Yeah. So at what point does an engineer show up for an interview at a tech company and just an AI just conducts the whole interview and then decides whether or not they get the job?
Well, there is definitely AI screening happening at the point of application right now. In fact, one of my former colleagues, Hilke Schulman, just wrote a whole book about this. And she's been on the book circuit talking about it. But I think what's interesting, at least for this particular story, is how job candidates are using AI. I found a couple of TikTok and YouTube videos, although, like Paresh said, it's hard to know how many of these are staged, just to illustrate a point, and how many are real, where people, engineering candidates, are doing a live coding test over video, and they're responding to questions based on what ChatGPT is spitting out for them. So because it happens so fast now, and those are both coding questions and something like the hiring manager saying, can you tell me if Java is single threaded or multi-threaded? And like the person just through a live transcript has put that into ChatGPT, and ChatGPT spits it out with an explanation of what that means and why. And so, yeah, it's pretty amusing to see. But one of the things that this could actually prompt, no pun intended, is for the interview process to change. If the interviews really have become sort of similar and hiring managers are asking the same sets of questions and people know they're going to get some of the same tests, you can prepare or chat GPT your way into a completely rote interview. And then that's not really benefiting anyone. So all of these changes in the market could force, and one would hope, a slightly more creative and maybe more meaningful interviewing experience for workers.
Yeah, I fear what we're seeing right now is just a pendulum swinging, you know, right in the far, far direction on one side, where it's these crazy questions, but we're going to come back slowly as they realize there's nothing to this and it's not leading to better hires.
Right, right. And hopefully it doesn't swing so far in the other direction again that we get the brain teasers of like, tell me how many windows are on office buildings in Manhattan without Googling.
Without
whatever
asking
those,
chat,
how
GPT.
Many jelly beans are in the jar, right?
Piano repair people.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you both for an invigorating conversation about the tech job market of all things.
Sure. I don't feel super confident. I will be hired as an ombudsman anytime soon.
Good luck with your barista applications, Michael.
Thank you. Oat milk, sir? All right. Let's take another quick break and we'll come right back with our recommendations. All right, Paresh, as our guest, you get to go first. What is your recommendation for us?
Well, since we've been talking about jobs, I figured we'd talk about the workplace. And my recommendation is, if you're aware of someone in your workplace who's disabled or has accessibility needs, maybe reach out to them in the next couple weeks and ask whether you're collaborating with them in the way that they prefer the most. It could be as something as simple as sharing presentations ahead of time before you present them at over a Google Meet or Zoom or whatever, and allowing them time to either digest it so they can sort of focus on lip reading maybe during a meeting, or they can prepare their questions ahead of time and send them electronically, whatever it is. And I bring this up because we often sort of overlook people's needs. And I don't think this only applies to people with disabilities. I think you can reach out to all your coworkers and sort of say, are we collaborating in the best way possible? Are we really sort of managing this relationship? And this seems like a good time to check on that. And, you know, it is Black History Month, you know, especially check in on your people of color colleagues and people who you just might not always interact with, but do occasionally, and sort of see how can we sort of have a better working relationship.
That is an excellent recommendation.
Yeah, it's very good advice.
Really thoughtful.
I don't know if it's more practical or philosophical, but you can make it a little bit of both.
I mean, much better than Galad's sliced lemons.
We do prefer the recommendations that straddle the line between practical and philosophical, so thank you for that. Lauren, what is your recommendation?
I was going to recommend a John Le Carré podcast, which is not a podcast featuring the now late John Le Carré, but a podcast with his biographer that was really good. I'm going to save that for another week for the John Le Carré fans out there. I'm going to recommend a documentary that I recently watched called Eternal Memory. It was Oscar nominated in 2023. It's, fair warning, very sad. It's about a couple facing Alzheimer's disease. One half of the couple has Alzheimer's, and his wife, who's a little bit younger than him, is trying to support him through it. The male character in it, Augusto, is really interesting because he was a journalist, and he was kind of a force during the Chilean dictatorship in the 70s and 90s. Once traditional media was sort of taken over by the government, he was finding all of these ways to get the word out about what was happening. He was a really passionate journalist. And he is now the one who is suffering cognitive decline. And the documentary really gets inside their home. Part of it takes place during the pandemic, and inside their lives and inside their relationship, which is very touching. And it's a little bit about personal memory and the decline of personal memory, but also about shared cultural memory in a way that I found to be, really, really, just really touching. So I recommend checking that out if you're in the mood for a tearjerker. I was watching it as part of another story I'm doing for Wired, which will come out shortly.
Awesome. Eternal Memory.
Eternal Memory. Yep, you can watch it. I watched it on Amazon Prime.
Okay. So it's like rentable.
It is rentable.
Okay.
Yep, it is. Mike, what's your recommendation?
I'm back on my BS, as you would say. I'm going to recommend a piece of music, the new Ty Siegel record.
Tell us about this.
Okay. Ty Siegel, T-Y.
This is a nice palate cleanser, by the way, after Fresh and I both gave very serious recommendations.
Mine is also very serious.
Okay.
T-Y Siegel, S-E-G-A-L-L. Look him up. He's a rock guy. He's a rock and roller. He plays guitar. He sings. His songs are a little bit on the heavy side, but they have a dash of sweetness and a very strong weird streak, which I love and appreciate. Ty is extremely prolific. He lives in Los Angeles. He used to live in San Francisco. He's from the same part of the world that I am, in Southern California. So I've been following his career for a while. And this album just came out, and he just launched a tour behind it. It's called Three Bells, and it has sort of a new band playing with him on stage. I saw the show last night. It was the first stop here in SF, and he's going all around the US, and then he's going to Europe in the summer. So if you listen to it and you like it, check him out live, because my God, what a show. It was just, I was floored for like an hour and a half. It was really amazing. Yeah, lots and lots of guitar. Lots. So if you're like a guitar person and you like your music to have a lot of like good guitar playing in it, not like show-offy guitar playing, but just like good, powerful, emotionally charged guitar playing, then like you should be listening to Ty Segall.
It sounds like a nice thing to listen to after a crazy job interview.
Yes. Yes. Or to let off some steam if you perhaps maybe have recently lost your job, or if you've or if you're fed up with the interview process. Yeah. It's very cathartic. Ty Segall, Three Bells, Drag City Records, double vinyl LP if you're a vinyl person. So yeah, check it out.
This bring is so on brand. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely bring earplugs. Dude cranks those guitar amps and you will feel it if you're anywhere within 50 feet of the stage. Bring earplugs.
You said Ty grew up near you. Did he also surf Doho?
Yeah. Really? I'm sure. I mean, yeah, I'm sure. He's from South Orange County, so yeah, probably. He's way younger than me, but yeah, probably surfed the same waves, rode the same waves growing up.
I didn't know you were from South Orange County.
Yeah, I'm from Laguna, Dana Point.
He was on Laguna Beach, the show. You didn't know?
I was not.
Your cliffs are fallen.
Yes, unfortunately, no. The part of the world is suffering right now. So my heart goes out to all them brethren in the OC. All right, that's enough. Okay, that is our show. Paresh, thank you, as always, for joining us.
Appreciate it. I'll be sending some critical feedback in the coming weeks.
I appreciate that. Awesome. And look forward to it. Say hello to your lovely dog, Kazu, for us.
Of course.
And thanks to all of you for listening. If you have feedback, you can skeet all of us on Blue Sky. Just check the show notes. Our producer is Boone Ashworth. We will be back with a new show next week. And until then, goodbye. And thanks to all of you for listening to the show. If you have feedbacks, you can...
I love those feedbacks. What is happening? I love those Sweet Baby Ray's feedbacks.
What is happening? Now that the show is over, check out Empower's app we mentioned earlier. With the free Empower dashboard, you can see your net worth, plan out your retirement age, track spending, and more. You can also connect with Empower's financial professionals and get a free second opinion to help with your money questions. Join 18 million Americans and take control of your financial future to empower what's next. Download the free app for Apple and Android devices now, or visit empower.com. From PRX.